Hi, and welcome to Detox, Talks the Detox, a podcast where we talk to some of the world's finest leaders about their detox rituals and how they maintain continuity in a world of noise and chaos. How they make sure that the criticism that the world puts on them doesn't affect their insight and they still continue to perform as well as they do. Thanks for tuning in. This is Kunal Sundaramani, and you are listening to Detox, Talks the Detox.
We have Maymay Fox on the podcast. Maymay is a board member for the Hope Foundation in Ireland, working on some amazing stuff here in Kolkata. She's also a New York Times best-selling author and has written for some of the most respectable platforms on the internet. Thank you for being here. It's so much of a pleasure to host you.
It is absolutely my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So you worked with some giants, to say the least, and just imagining back in that situation when you've been working with such influential people, what would you say are a couple takeaways that you've been able to add into your personal life from all the different massive projects you worked on throughout the past years and all those different experiences and different conversations you had with all these giants? What would be a couple key takeaways that you ideally been able to take a step back and add them into your own life?
Wow, that's quite a question. I love it. Just going off, I have definitely looked at every project I've worked on. So specifically for over 20 years now, I've been a freelance editor and ghostwriter and co-author of nonfiction books in the spirituality, health and wellness and psychology space. And so they're literally guidebooks to how to live a more fulfilling life, a lot of them. That's really the intention behind them. So I have had the opportunity to learn a great deal. One of the first books I ever worked on, I was in my 20s, and I knew very little about Buddhism, meditation, and yoga at that time. I was coming from a more conventional Western background, and I was asked to freelance edit a book by Robert Thurman, who is an incredibly respected professor of Buddhism at Columbia University and was like best friends with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. He went to Tibet like in the 60s and hung out with the Dalai Lama. And so working on that book is all about, it's about Buddhism, but you know, it's really more of applying the philosophy to your life rather than any particular, you know, religious agenda. So I think that's what first got me interested in meditation. And I literally thought I was one of these people who can't meditate. I don't know. Have you ever met anyone like that? Or do you feel that way? It's like, I just can't meditate.
I felt that way, I think, for the majority of my life until one fine day I said, I think I've heard everyone who I look up to say something about meditation. Let's just give it a try. And yeah, it just changes your life.
Yeah. So I have a funny story about that, because here I worked on Infinite Life. So I knew the importance of meditation. Of course, like you, I felt like every guru who I followed, every kind of business leader I followed, it didn't matter what, right? Whether you're talking about health, happiness, you know, business success, whatever, it's like meditation. And I just couldn't do it. I would sit down and, you know, I'd feel my monkey brain jumping around, and I just thought, no, I just can't, I can't do it. So you know what I did? I decided that I was going to go to meditation boot camp. And I signed up for a 10-day silent Vipassana meditation retreat. Now, I'm sure you've heard of these, Kunal, but they're, you know, they're offered for free everywhere in the world all the time. And it's extraordinary because I believe it's like one of the largest completely volunteer-run organizations on the planet. And it's free. Like your housing is free, your food is free, your instruction is free. At the end, they say, you know, you can make a donation if you feel like it, but there's no pressure at all. So I found one of these in Northern California, and I am not exaggerating when I say it was one of the scariest, most intimidating things I have ever done in my life. I just showed up there, and you sit down for a meal, and then you go into the meditation hall and you get a little speech, and then you stop talking and you do nothing for 10 straight days. There is no reading of books. You're not allowed to bring books. You don't have your phone. It's not the talking part that actually is so challenging. It's just the fact that there's there's nothing except you just wake up, you go sit in meditation, you have a small breakfast, you sit, you have a little lunch, you sit, you have a piece of fruit for dinner, you sit. You get like a little lecture in the evening, and it's kind of like the most entertaining program or movie that you've ever seen in your life, because you're just, you know, you've had so little stimulation. And I mean, the first couple of days, I thought I was going to freak out. I just wasn't, you know, I was like, I'm going to run away. I can't do this. Some people did freak out. Like somebody just broke down sobbing, and it was just felt antsy. I felt annoyed. And then somewhere around the third day, I just settled into this extraordinary sense of peace and calm. And it was like better than any drug or medicine or anything. And it was all coming from inside me, you know, like I could just feel it. I could just feel my brain hit a different frequency. And I'm not to say that it just flowed from then on, because it didn't. There were still sits where I was very fidgety, times when I felt bored and stuff. But generally from then on out, it was just a much more enjoyable experience. And I actually remember going in after I had a particularly bad, like fidgety, monkey-brained, agitated sit on like the sixth day or something. I went, and you could do these interviews with the teacher. So I went in for an interview with the teacher, and I said, you know, this is really bothering me because I feel like I had it and now I've lost it. And the teacher just laughed. And he's like, no, that is meditation. That's it. That's what it is. You know, like it isn't like you get to a place. It's not a destination. It's the journey, and it's always going to be like that for your whole life. And so that felt very freeing. And then sometime around the seventh day, I had what I would describe as actually kind of a religious experience, which also, this is not something I'd ever had in my life, like anything like this, where I was in my meditation and I just felt actually in my body, in my cells, my connection to the planet, the connection of every living being on the planet, just the fact that we are all interwoven in this interconnected web. You cannot separate. It's ridiculous. It's like waves on the ocean, they often say, right? You look and there's individual waves, but it's an ocean. We are life. We are like this living, breathing organism. We are all here together. And it was so beautiful. It made me cry. I mean, I just wept tears of joy. And I actually, when that session ended and I walked back outside, I literally went and hugged a tree, which I don't know if you're familiar with the expression tree hugger, but it's kind of, you know, slang for a hippie or, you know, but I was literally hugging a tree. I just felt like, you know, I understand this tree in a way that I never have before. So that was probably one of the most profound experiences in my whole life. And that came directly from, you know, this book that I'd worked on. That's a very long answer to your question.
No, that's amazing. I love that. That's so deep. I think meditation as an activity is so deep in itself. And yeah, I think when you try it out for the first time, you just feel like it's just not for you. I think everyone feels that. And yeah, you just need to keep trying. And it's kind of like a bamboo. You just level up at one go. Like you don't see growth until you see growth.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny how ever since that, so I did two more 10-day Vipassana meditation retreats since then. So I've done three altogether. And I just do find that ever since then, like now, if I even just sit for 5 minutes, I can drop into that place, you know, more readily. Not always, but as I said, it's almost, I feel like there is an analogy to like computer programming. Where it's like, once you've downloaded the program, you know, you can like get there. It's hard to get there the first time, you know. I understand why a lot of people just give up.
I think I've heard that with everyone. The first time you try meditation, it's just not for you. And you're like, okay, this is not for me. I'm not the meditation kind. Let me just listen to some music, or let me try something else out. But yeah, it's insane. Once you understand the power of meditation, I don't think there's a way to go back.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
And you're just glad you did it, because it's so powerful. Like, I think it takes, like, you need to do it a couple of times to be able to even do it. And then it's just a lot better. I think just getting into that brain frequency, it's healing in itself.
I agree. Yes. and it's free and it's available anytime, anywhere, right? So there's a lot to be said for that.
Perfect. Taking a second angle, something I actually thought a lot about is when you work on such big projects, all of them being time consuming to say the least and lasting for the minimum of a few months, when in the middle of a big project, how do you look at detoxing and not letting the stress of completing it or the stress of the destination overwhelm?
That's a great question. You know, for me, I've always been really big on boundary setting. So I, because now the whole world has shifted to this, you know, work from home situation, right, due to the pandemic. But I was working from home, you know, 25 years ago when it was more unusual. And I was a digital nomad. And so I would live in different places and work when I wanted. But the way that I managed it, and I don't know that this is the best way for everyone, but for me, what worked best was to always, I basically set office hours for myself. So even though I didn't have an office to go to, even though I didn't have a boss who's looking over my shoulder, checking my timesheet, no, I just, all I would do is I would get paid by the book, by the project. So like you said, that would go for months, right? So I just said, like, for me, what works is working when everybody else works. I want to be able to stop work at the end of the day and go to a yoga class when other people are going to yoga class and go have dinner with friends and get a good night's sleep. And so I always kind of just structured my day as I would have if I had been working, with the obvious difference that, you know, if I ever wanted to do something in the middle of the day on a Monday, I could. But that's always been really helpful to me. That's that I set like a time frame and a structure. And I see people struggling with that now. That's the reason I bring it up, is because now so many people have transitioned to remote work and struggling to keep those boundaries, right? Like getting on their email at 10 p.m. or whatever. And I think it's up to you. You know, you have to create those kind of boundaries for yourself. You know, your job is not going to do it for you.
So I read up on this mantra you use called fear less, love more. I love that. What was the process of coming up with it?
Yes, my mantra is fear less, love more. I've had it printed on stickers. I have it up on my website. It was an actual slow process. It was years to come up with it. It began with when I was in my early 30s, I got divorced and I went through a really hard time. There's actually also a big incident with my father and my family of origin. And also I myself got divorced at the exact same time. And so I had always been a really high achieving and successful person. And suddenly the world wasn't working the way that I thought it was supposed to. And I felt really like a failure. I was really down on myself for getting divorced. I thought it meant that, you know, I'd taken this vow and I'd screwed up. And so I was struggling and I went through a lot of anxiety. And it was the first time I'd really dealt with major anxiety and had trouble sleeping. And that was when I went on my first Vipassana retreat. But I also started thinking, just like, what is the point of this anxiety? What is the point of this fear? When you're talking about a fear that's very realistic, like, you know, there's a tiger chasing you through the jungle. That's like a real fear, right? You can do something. But when it's this kind of vague fear, anxiety of like, I'm not good enough, people are going to judge me, it doesn't serve anything. And so I said, I've got to be fearless. But when I thought about that a little more, I thought, no, wait, I don't want to be fearless. Because like I said, there's times when fear is actually helpful. It's beneficial. I mean, there's a reason why it's here for us as human beings when we need to protect ourselves in dangerous situations. So then I thought, no, it's actually fearless. So I put this up on my bulletin board where I have like a kind of vision board with pictures and quotes and things that inspire me. And I put fearless. And so I was happy with that. I thought, okay, now I'm going to, you know, brave through my 30s as a divorced woman and rebuild myself courageously. And so I was doing Vipassana retreats. I did a yoga teacher training. I went to Costa Rica and decided that I wanted to learn how to surf. And I led a yoga retreat in Costa Rica where we volunteered to help build a school. And I just kept taking on, like, I read 100 spiritual books and, you know, just tried to do everything I could in terms of self-improvement. I went to therapy. I was in therapy with a psychotherapist. And out of that, I realized that, I mean, it is, I did really value fearing less. And at the same time, there was like the positive side of the equation was missing. And that is to love more. So as I kind of climbed out of this hole, and as I found my way back into a place of real self-love, fundamentally, because I think I've always been a fairly compassionate person. But, you know, I realized, like, oh, wow, I have to love myself. Like, love is actually the most important thing in the universe. I mean, it is what makes life go. It's what makes life worth living. It's why we're here. I believe this with all my heart. And I think, you know, I don't mean love just obviously in a romantic sense, but love for our children, love for ourselves, love for our parents, and love for people we don't know. And so the point of that was kind of in my actions, in my life, I need to be doing things that have a positive impact on the world. So that is the love more piece of the equation. So fear less, love more.
I love how you find it all into four words. I think that's an insane level of summarizing it in such a beautiful way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so it is my mantra, and I repeat it all the time, and I think it all the time.
I think coming up with a couple words to really look at when you're in a phase where you really need support from yourself more than anyone else is so important.
Yes, I had another one from my therapist, actually, in those years. I remember speaking with her and saying, like, you know, I was telling myself, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And she was like, no. You know, that, because that's like still projecting to the future, right? And the goal is to be present and be okay within the present. So she said, this is what I want you to use instead. All is well. All is well. It's like, you know, just staying present really in this very moment. Nothing horrible is happening right now. Right now, everything is okay. All is well. it's really powerful. It seems so simple, but it's so powerful, you know, especially if you're prone to anxiety and you're kind of, you know, freaking out about things. It's a great way to ground yourself.
Yeah, that's very deep in itself. I think looking to the future for something again becomes really based around a destination. And yeah, that can be self-sabotaging in itself.
Yeah. I mean, I believe in having goals. I have goals. I'm sure you have goals too, but, you know, it's always a balance, right? Of, you know, you're working towards your goals, but also appreciating where you are right now and, not stressing yourself too much about those goals.
I realize family life is like a very important part of your entire routine daily. I'd love to know more on that.
Oh my gosh. Hugely. I can't even express to you because, I'm kind of a late in life parent, but I was going through a divorce in my 30s. And then one of the other biggest journeys of my life was to being a parent. I always wanted to be a mother, like always since I was a little kid. And yet here I was like 38 and single and totally freaking out. And, you know, I had people asking me, are you just going to have kids on your own? And I said, I really don't envision that for myself. I totally respect it. I have dear friends who've done it, but it seems really intense. And I really have always wanted to do it with a partner. So amazingly, I met the love of my life, who's born in India, in Hyderabad, but grew up in Long Island. And he wanted to have kids right away as well. He was older too, you know, my age, and we were nearing 40. So we're like, we got to get this going. So we went through all kinds of fertility treatments and struggles in which every one of my spiritual tools came into use. And it was amazing, Kunal, because it's like, I don't know, but you can listen to people talk about it. And then you can sort of understand, like, oh, it must be good to do yoga, meditation, and eat healthy, and, you know, take care of your body and work out and all these things, right? But then you go through a crisis And suddenly you're using all those tools, right? So that going through the crisis of infertility, like I was able to manage it so much better than I had, you know, the crisis of my divorce, just like, you know, 6 years earlier, 7 years earlier. So I used all the tools that I had practiced, you know, to actually make it through that difficult journey. And I just knew that somehow it was going to happen, and it finally did. And not only that, but I found out I was pregnant with twins, and it was like the happiest day of my life. I mean, I really have deeply, deeply honored the journey of becoming a mother. And wow. I think the fact that I had to struggle so hard for it, and the fact that I almost didn't have it, and the fact that I arrived at it later in life, for me, that's been an incredible blessing. I feel like I've come to parenting with more wisdom and fearless love more, you know, but it is beautiful. It is, every cliche about parenting is true. So it's like the greatest spiritual teacher. It just forces you to fully commit to another person and put them before yourself. That's it. Somebody else is more important than you always and forever for the rest of your life. And having twins, it was kind of times two right out of the gate. And it was super intense. It was really challenging in many ways in the early years, especially. I mean, first there's just no sleep at all for months. And then, you know, little toddlers running around terrorizing everything. And then, you know, now they just continue to grow. And it is such a blessing. It's the meaning of life. It's giving back in the most profound way.
What do you say was your go-to detox at any point where you needed like one go-to detox throughout the journey of parenting?
Yeah, for sure. Meditation. In fact, I do it with my kids. So when they start to get really agitated, I will encourage them to sit and meditate with me. We'll sit together and breathe. And then just breathing, which is kind of even not, you know, when if you think like, I can't meditate or I don't have the time, like just breathing to stop and take some deep breaths. You can always do it. You know, even if you're in the middle of a meeting, or even if you're, you know, having like a total panic attack or something, is the kids are totally stressing me out. I just stop, breathe. So I'm a huge believer in that. And I think that it's important to take breaks. I mean, I talked about boundaries with work. So I think it's also important to take breaks as a parent. So for me, that's been really, really critical. So I work, I'm a working mom. I have been since the boys turned 6 months old, and I love my job and I want to work. And I believe that taking that time away from the kids and doing something that's important to me, when I come back to them, you know, it makes me that much of a better mother. I just think it's really important to set boundaries in your life so that there's, you know, the self-care. And I working out is hugely important. I haven't even talked about that, but that's a whole conversation for another time. I am like, I need to exercise. So when I exercise, I'm happier. My body's happier. My brain is happier. Everything works better. So I do yoga. I do like weightlifting, high intensity interval training. I go for walks and hikes outside. It doesn't really matter what it is. It's just, you know, being embodied, and I find it super valuable.
When did you realize that you needed a detox ritual while parenting?
Very, very early on. I think I was about 3 months in. I was breastfeeding. That requires like every 3 hours, and trying to get it longer at night. And I actually went for a hike with my husband, and the babies were strapped onto us in like ergo carriers, and I completely melted down. I just lost it. I was like sobbing, and I was like, I'm so happy to be a mom, but this is so hard. I just can't handle it. So that was when I realized I needed a detox ritual. I think it was like at that moment where I barely had spent, you know, more than a few minutes out of their presence in 3 months, where I was like, well, I need to start taking some breaks.
Lovely. Then moving further, when you're in the midst of a project and you're working on something, on a piece of writing, And how do you keep yourself detoxed while you're working on the piece of writing, especially with all the stuff happening, especially when you have kids around and all the possible distractions of the world, your phone and every possible distraction? How do you keep yourself focused and detoxed while you're writing, like right in the moment?
Like in the moment, it's hard. It was super hard the last year and a half with the pandemic. You know, we had a year where they pretty much weren't in school. So it was really challenging because the kids were home, they weren't in school. I had 5-year-old twin boys and I'm still trying to work. So it was really put the challenge before me to find ways to make that happen. And of course my husband helped and we traded off some, and then we ended up moving back to Hawaii in part to get help from my parents because we just needed some extra support. But honestly, to keep the focus in the midst of that, I have to plug in the headphones and put on like calming background music. So I love Spotify and they have all these amazing playlists. Like literally one of my favorites is called Music for Writers. But I can't listen to music that has lyrics, like has words, because it confuses me, you know, when I'm writing. So I will just listen to like happy classical or mellow jazz or, you know, just kind of some calming music. I have to kind of like create the world in my head. I mean, like that seems like something that probably everyone has to do in this day and age, since we're all like working from home with kids and partners and parents and, you know, pets jumping on our Zoom calls, whatever it is.
Yeah, staying detoxed from all the distractions. Wow, it's not easy for sure.
It's really not easy. No.
Takes a lot of work to just be able to detox yourself from everything that's happening around so you can focus on maybe even journaling or writing down something that means something useful.
I mean, when I'm writing, I like have to, you know, there's no choice. So, I mean, if I'm writing, I have to be focused on it. So that's just it. I have to tune everything else out except for the calming music.
I think we all somewhere need to evolve with how times are changing to be able to stay detoxed and focus on something.
It's true, right? I mean, I think our attention spans are getting shorter and it is getting, I do believe that technology is impacting the brain. And not all in bad ways. I don't believe that. You know, I'm a real optimist. But shortening the attention span, where it requires greater effort for us to really focus on one task at a time. Don't you think?
100%. I think the goods are the pros include like stuff like democratizing opportunities. But like when you look at the other side, you just realize, say, how TikTok has affected the attention span, and say in less than a generation, the attention span has fallen from a book that might take 9 hours to read, divided in four sessions of 2.5 hours, attention spans of 15 seconds. So it's insane how, yeah, I think writing in the midst of that is one of the most sane things, and it's so important to stay detoxed while you're doing that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really a powerful tool. I recommend it to a lot of my coaching clients to spend a little bit of time writing every day, even if they're not writers, you know, whether it's a gratitude journal or just some thoughts for the day, something like that.
For sure.
The greatest detox tool that I have right now is gratitude. I have a friend who has been going through a really difficult time with her husband, has been diagnosed with cancer, and we have a practice of what we call fierce gratitude. So we every day make an effort to focus on the things that we really appreciate about our life. I'm sure you've read in books before, heard from Oprah about the importance of having a gratitude journal. So every day I think of at least 3 things that I am super grateful for. And it can be anything from something big, like my children or my husband, to something small, like a beautiful flower that I see while I'm out for a walk. And I find this really valuable, especially during this pandemic time, to remember that my loved ones were so blessed and so lucky.
So moving to the rapid fire round, these are a couple of quick questions. Try to answer them in the least possible time.
Okay.
Apples or oranges?
Apples.
Apple iPhone or Android phone?
Apple.
Mac or Windows? I think I already know the answer to this.
Mac.
You wake up in 2050. What's the first thing you do?
I wonder where are my husband and where are my children.
So you sleep tonight, you wake up in 2050 tomorrow. What's the first thing you Google?
I would Google what the heck is going on in the world.
Now you wake up in 2030. What's the first thing you do?
Same thing. I mean, I Google what the heck is going on in the world.
What's one destination you really love?
The Okavango Delta.
If there was one place you had to be for the rest of your life, what would that place be?
Hawaii.
What is one thing you really count as your largest detox ritual?
Meditation.
What would you put on a billboard?
Fear less, love more.
What's your spirit animal?
Giraffe.
Perfect. Thanks, Atan, for being on the podcast. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. I super, super enjoyed getting to meet you.
You just heard an episode on the Detox Podcast. Do not forget to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform, whether it is Spotify or iTunes. We are there.